Make sure you say son. Make sure you say uncle. But most importantly, make sure you say human. Human life. Let it marinate in your mouth, in your minds. A human life. So many people have reached out to me telling me they're sorry that this happened to my family. Well, don't be sorry, because this has been happening to my family for a long time. Longer than I can account for. It happened to Emmett Till. Emmett Till is my family. Philando, Mike Brown, Sandra. This has been happening to my family. And I've shared tears for every single one of these people that it's happened to. This is nothing new. I'm not sad. I'm not sorry. I'm angry. And I'm tired. I haven't cried one time. I stopped crying years ago. I am numb. I have been watching police murder people that look like me for years. I'm not sad. I don't want your pity. I want change.
So once again, the pattern repeats itself. An unarmed black person is shot by the cops. In response, people go into the streets. More law enforcement is sent in, and the chaos only continues to grow. I could tell you the story with my eyes closed by now. Like, if I wanted to, I could pre-record 5 of these segments, go on vacation, and you'd probably never know. And in this situation, just when you thought things couldn't get any worse, last night, it did.
Breaking news, a very dangerous situation in Kenosha, Wisconsin. 2 people are dead in clashes that may have involved armed vigilantes. People who may have moved into that city to counter the protests following the police shooting of Jacob Blake.
The sheriff used the word militia to describe some of the people who may have been involved in last night's shooting.
We've just learned that a 17-year-old has been charged with first-degree murder in at least one of those killings last night.
And we now have seen some social media video of a man with a long gun strapped across his chest running down the street or walking down the street and being chased by people who are yelling, "He's shooting, he shot someone." The man trips, falls on his own. People still try to come and apprehend him and get him. He then fires again at point blank range at 2 more people. And then the man continues to walk down the street. He is a white man with a huge gun strapped across his chest with his hands up. As you see police vehicles, not one, not 2, but 3 vehicles who are coming towards him. He has his hands up with his gun. People are yelling, "He shot someone, he shot someone," and police pass him by. There are a lot of questions here as to why he wasn't apprehended at that time.
That's right. Last night, some guy decided to drive to Kenosha with his militia buddies to protect a business and apparently ended up shooting 3 people and killing 2. But don't worry, the business is okay. And let me tell you something. No one drives into a city with guns because they love someone else's business that much. That's some bullshit. No one has ever thought, "Oh, it's my solemn duty to pick up a rifle and protect that TJ Maxx." They do it because they're hoping to shoot someone. That's the only reason people like him join these gangs in the first place. And yes, I said it, a gang. Enough with this militia bullshit. This isn't the Battle of Yorktown. It's a bunch of dudes threatening people with guns. And while what happened with those shootings last night is tragic, what happened afterwards is illuminating. Because it made me wonder, it really made me wonder why some people get shot 7 times in the back, while other people are treated like human beings and reasoned with and taken into custody with no bullets in their bodies. How come Jacob Blake was seen as a deadly threat for a theoretical gun that he might have and might try to commit a crime with? But this gunman who was armed and had already shot people who had shown that he is a threat was arrested the next day, given full due process of the law, and generally treated like a human being whose life matters. How did Dylan Roof shoot up a church, James Holmes shoot up a movie theater, and both live to tell about it? Why is it that the police decide that some threats must be extinguished immediately while other threats get the privilege of being diffused? I'm asking these as questions, but I feel like we know the answer. The answer is that the gun doesn't matter as much as who is holding the gun. Because to some people, black skin is the most threatening weapon of all.
We're
looking at all of it. That was an interesting situation. You saw the same tape as I saw. And he was trying to get away from them, I guess, it looks like. And he fell. And then they very violently attacked him. And it was something that we're looking at right now, and it's under investigation. But I guess he was in very big trouble. He would have been, he probably would have been killed, but it's under investigation.
Donald Trump's refusal there to condemn Kyle Rittenhouse, who traveled across state lines to a Black Lives Matter demonstration and ended up allegedly killing two protesters, puts the president squarely on the side of lawlessness and chaos. But Donald Trump went even further, also placing himself in the office of the American presidency on the side of those Trump backers who rode in the back of pickup trucks to shoot Black Lives Matter protesters with paint guns.
Well, I understand they had large numbers of people that were supporters, but that was a peaceful protest. And paint as a defensive mechanism, paint is not bullets.
But note to our viewers, all paint is not equal to Donald J. Trump. Just 2 months ago, Donald Trump threatened to prosecute and jail anyone found to have poured paint on monuments. Donald Trump took his divisive campaign message to Kenosha, Wisconsin today after that state's leaders had asked him to stay away. Trump's nod to violence is jockeying for headlines today with his full embrace of his own special conspiracy theories, one so bizarre, even Fox's Laura Ingraham seemed taken aback.
Who do you think is pulling Biden's strings? Is it former Obama officials?
People that you've never heard of. People that are in the dark shadows, people that...
Oh, what does that mean? That sounds like conspiracy theory, dark shadows.
No, people that you haven't heard of. They're people that are on the streets. They're people that are controlling the streets.
The events in Kenosha would be infuriating at any time, but it's somehow especially infuriating that they took place in the same week where the RNC was desperate to reassure the country that America isn't racist, while simultaneously fear-mongering about violent crime threatening law-abiding citizens. It was a disconnect that was pretty well summed up by NBA coach Doc Rivers in an emotional post-game press conference on Tuesday.
What stands out to me is just watching the Republican convention and they're spewing this fear, right? Like, all you hear Donald Trump and all of them talking about fear. We're the ones getting killed. We're the ones getting shot. We're the ones that were denied to live in certain communities. We've been hung, we've been shot, and all you do is keep hearing about fear. It's amazing to me why we keep loving this country and this country does not love us back.
It's all exhaustingly depressing. And the RNC this week actually ended up being a pretty good reminder that where we still might end up going is genuinely terrifying. Because if it showed us one thing this week, it's the danger in continuing to be governed by an administration that encourages the ugliest forces in American society, that lionizes threats of violence against peaceful protest, that tells us there is no conflict between supporting law enforcement and our African-American neighbors, and that insists that the best is yet to come, which, given everything that we've seen in the last 4 years, is sounding less like a promise and more like a threat.
So, Barack Obama, failed president, okay? Kenyan in chief was talking to LeBron James, who, as you know, is, I would say, definitely not as good as Michael Jordan. But I would also say he's not as good as a group of randomly selected players. Larry Bird, John Stockton, Chris Mullin, Kevin Love, Dirk Nowitzki, Steve Nash, George Mikan. Remember him? The big old in all the black and white footage. He did a lot of, wasn't that good, but he was better than LeBron, I can tell you that. So I don't respect all these active athletes who are trying to bring politics and sports. That's why I like strong athletes with great patriotism, like Curt Schilling, who does, you know, strong fraud, lost his money in video games, does great fraud on Build the Wall. That's a great athlete, okay? And a great patriot. And guys like Aubrey Huff. You know, I love tough guys with women's names. It's Aubrey, sounds kind of like a woman. And maybe that's why he fights so hard to be so tough on Twitter. Okay, so we love athletes that love MAGA, that rip off people and have women's names. Not like LeBron James, who, you know, wants people to live and have rights.
Preceding show was recorded at Waveform's WGXC in the Hudson Valley in New York State.
This is an important message for all my strong MAGA supporters. I'm not doing it through the fake news tonight. I need to talk directly to our great patriots. As you know, we are under attack. We're under vicious and nasty attack from the left. Law and order is collapsing, and they are using a very special, very nasty new weapon called soup. You know, we used to have a thing called soup kitchens. Not a lot of people know this, but it would be where the people who didn't have food, you know, kind of not hardworking people, they'd go and get the free soup, and you'd keep it in a big, like a big bucket, a bowl, pot, a big pot. And, you know, you'd dip the spoon, the big spoon, the big, Mike, what's it called, the ladle. The ladle? That's a funny word. You'd dip it in the ladle, and you'd pour it out, but nobody could take the soup with them. It was safe in the big pots. And now, recently, probably under Obama, they invented something called soup cans. And don't get me started on bags of soup. They swing a bag of soup, you're a goner. That's one of the nastiest ways to go. But now they have cans of soup. And Mike, I know you said you hate cans, right? When mother walks in a tight shirt, you tell her you hate the cans. Not a fan of cans, Mike. He knew right away. But they're using soup as a weapon against us, and we're defenseless. All we have are assault weapons and, you know, insanity on our side. They have unlimited soup, unlimited quantities of soup. And they come in three varieties, and you got to look out for all of them. Campbell soup, which is kind of the poor people's soup, and the cans are kind of little. They can still hurt, but you got to be careful. And then Progresso, okay? We know what that sounds like, progressive. It's a nasty liberal soup. You get hit with one of those, it's like getting hit by the whole squad with their socialism. And last, watch out for chunky soup, used and endorsed by many African-American NFL players with the big chunks. Very tough. So get your weapons.
You have tuned into the River Newsroom's Hudson Valley Coronavirus Report from Lissa Harris of The River and Roger Hannigan-Gilson of The Other Hudson Valley. Go to theotherhudsonvalley.com or therivernewsroom.com for more information and links to the stories included here. This report is a collaboration with several Hudson Valley journalists, airing on WGXC 90.7 FM at midnight, 5, 7, and 9 a.m., and online in the audio archives at WGXC.org. La Voz, a Spanish-language news magazine covering the Hudson Valley, is translating these roundups and co-publishing them on its website in Spanish at lavoz.bard.edu.
Starting Tuesday, school districts across New York State must provide daily reports on COVID-19 case data to the State Department of Health, Governor Andrew Cuomo announced this week. The data will be included in a new public dashboard on the state website. Quote, many of the school districts have testing protocols that will be in place as part of their plans, but as I've said from the beginning, those plans are only as good as their implementation, unquote, Cuomo said on September 3rd. Quote, I hope this will give teachers and parents some confidence that the plans are being implemented. If there's a positive case, they will know, and DOH will know, and the locals can respond quickly, unquote. Not included in Cuomo's announcement, information on how many school districts are testing students and staff as part of their reopening plans. Some school districts are conducting tests. New York City Public Schools, the largest district in the U.S. with more than 1.1 million students, has an ambitious plan to conduct mandatory random testing for 10 to 20% of all students and staff each month, at a potential cost of $10 million a month. But many school districts have not announced plans to test students, nor do they have the resources to do so. Steep state aid cuts are already forcing some school districts to abandon plans for in-person learning. In the September 2nd roundup, we've reported that an outbreak at SUNY Oneonta had forced the university to begin testing the entire student population and found 289 cases and forced the university to suspend in-person classes for 2 weeks. Since then, things have moved fast. SUNY Oneonta is now up to 540 student cases as of Friday evening, September 4th. And the entire campus is shutting down for the fall semester, a decision announced by university officials on September 3rd when the case count stood at 389 and climbing. The outbreak at SUNY Oneonta has also prompted the SUNY system to implement surveillance testing for all of their campuses. In an announcement September 4th, incoming SUNY Chancellor Jim Malatras said that the state system will use new saliva-based testing protocols developed at SUNY Upstate Medical University and SUNY Albany to test every student at every SUNY campus every 2 weeks. The high level of surveillance depends on the SUNY labs being able to process tens of thousands of samples a day, a goal made possible by recent advances in saliva-based diagnostic rapid testing, as well as a, quote, pooled testing, unquote, protocol that allows pools of 10 to 25 samples to be scanned all at once and set aside for individual testing if the pool comes back positive. As of September 3rd, SUNY Oneonta had a positivity rate of almost 17%, according to data on tests conducted so far. It is unclear how many students still remain to be tested or how many went home without being tested. So far, according to the administrators, no employees have tested positive, although only 208 results have been processed. The campus has almost 500 faculty members, along with other staff. SUNY Faculty Union President Fred Kowal said that faculty across the SUNY system are, quote, frightened, unquote, by the outbreak. The faculty union pressed SUNY leaders over the summer to require students to be tested before returning to campus, but most campuses, including SUNY Oneonta, did not require testing. The cases being found on the SUNY Oneonta campus through pooled testing are being reported on the New York State Data Tracker, said Jill Montag, a spokesperson for the New York State Department of Health. Quote, laboratories performing pooled testing for diagnostic purposes are required to report test results to the department, and that is reflected in the data on our COVID-19 tracker, unquote, Montag wrote in an email. But most of the cases found on SUNY Oneonta campus in the past week did not show up in state case data for Otsego County. New York State reported 110 cases found in Otsego County over the past week, a fraction of the cases found on campus. Student cases may have been included in the data for their home counties instead of Otsego County. Quote, test counts are assigned to a county based on this order of preference. 1, the patient's address. 2, the ordering healthcare provider's address. Or 3, the ordering facility's address. It is not uncommon, because of insurance and billing, for a student's home address to be reported by a laboratory, unquote, Montag wrote. Students at SUNY Oneonta who have tested positive or come into contact with positive cases are being advised to stay on campus until they are finished with isolation or quarantine, but some have already left, raising the possibility that the outbreak may seed cases elsewhere. The New York Times interviewed a Long Island student with COVID-19 who is now isolated at home with her family. SUNY spokesperson Jim Urso told The River that the university was strongly advising students not to leave campus if they were under isolation or quarantine, but that the SUNY system does not have the authority to force them to stay. Quote, legally, we can't force them to do it, unquote, he said. Quote, SUNY is working with state and local health departments. The health department can issue those more stringent orders, unquote. The Federal Emergency Management Agency moved this week to stop paying for masks and other protective equipment for schools, transit, and other non-emergency settings. In a statement issued September 3rd, Cuomo blasted the decision. Quote, by quietly changing FEMA policy to no longer fund personal protective equipment or disinfection efforts for the MTA and schools, the president is telling essential workers that he does not value their safety or their sacrifices over the last 6 months. Make no mistake, this is just another attempt by President Trump to hurt New York, unquote. A hopeful perspective on vaccines for a change, Derek Lowe, a longtime industry expert who blogs about drug discovery for Science Translational Medicine, wrote this week in an overview of the COVID-19 vaccine research landscape that the pandemic will give the whole field of vaccine development a boost. Quote, an excellent side effect is that the vaccine technology will never be the same after this, unquote, Lowe writes. Quote, it's going to be like aircraft design before and after World War II, and for many of the same reasons. This whole pandemic has been awful in many different ways, but we're going to come out of it stronger and more capable than when we went in, unquote. Congressperson Antonio Delgado, who has been touring the 19th Congressional District to see how his constituents are holding up through the pandemic, visited Chase Home Farm in Dutchess County on September 4th to talk about the impact of COVID-19 on local farms. Delgado took a few minutes out of touring around Columbia and Dutchess counties to shoot a quick video that is on his website. Announced New York by New York State on September 3rd and September 4th. Casinos can reopen statewide at 25% capacity starting September 9th, Cuomo announced on September 3rd. Reopening casinos will have to follow new safety protocols that include masking, physical distancing, additional staffing to control occupancy, extra cleaning and sanitation, and new air filtration and ventilation requirements. Malls in New York City, which have been kept closed longer than malls in the rest of the state, may also begin reopening on September 9th with 50% capacity and new safety protocols. On September 2nd, Cuomo announced a partnership with HelloFresh to provide fresh meals to veterans and military families in New York City. The partnership, an extension of the state's Nourish New York program launched to combat hunger during the COVID-19 pandemic, is expected to provide more than 200,000 meals with help from Black Veterans for Social Justice, the Campaign Against Hunger, and the New York City Department of Veterans Affairs. Cuomo issued an executive order on September 4th, putting a halt to tax and water lien sale planned in New York City. In a joint statement with Attorney General Letitia James, the governor said the action was taken to spare homeowners. Quote, COVID-19 has caused enormous disruption to the daily lives of New Yorkers, including their ability to keep a roof over their head. The tax and water lien sale was delayed in May in recognition of this hardship, and given the current economic climate, it makes sense to delay it again so that homeowners aren't facing further uncertainty. This measure is part and parcel with our ongoing efforts to help New Yorkers weather the ongoing public health emergency, unquote. Now the region-by-region roundup, starting with the lower Hudson Valley. Two priests and a staff member at Holy Innocence Church in Pleasantville have tested positive for COVID-19, the Examiner News reports. The Westchester County Department of Health advised that anyone who attended morning mass on August 24th or 26th, the August 29th First Communion ceremonies, and all masses last Sunday, August 30th, are subject to a 14-day quarantine. Westchester County hosted a wide-ranging discussion on schools, kids, and mental health on September 3rd, which included PSAs geared toward children. The 20-minute conversation included County Executive George Latimer, White Plains School District Superintendent Dr. Joe Ricca, Department of Community Mental Health Deputy Commissioner Joe Glazer, and the Department of DCMH Children's Mental Health Services Program Coordinator Tori Shaw. In the mid-Hudson Valley, a crowd of 4,400 cadets is expected to attend Army's first game at West Point on September 5th. How, may you ask? The U.S. Military Academy is technically federal property and thus not subject to New York State rules on large gatherings. The crowd will not include any fans from outside the insular campus, but it will be one of the largest crowds for a single event in New York since March. Dutchess County will host a free drive-in showing of the film Back to the Future at the Overlook Drive-In in Poughkeepsie on September 23rd to honor first responders and frontline workers. In advance of Labor Day weekend, Columbia County released guidelines for public gatherings and face coverings, or rather, let's call it a reminder. Quote, the desire to get together and celebrate and enjoy our friends and family over the holiday weekend is strong, and we all understand that, unquote, wrote Columbia County Board of Supervisors Chairperson Matt Morrell in a press release. Quote, however, even though it's a long weekend, it doesn't mean that we can pretend physical distancing and mask-wearing rules have been lifted, unquote. Some welcome good news on the coronavirus strikes campus front. SUNY New Paltz has reported no new cases since September 2nd. The campus currently has 6 active cases among students. Vassar College will begin Phase 2 of its return to campus guidelines on September 8th. Phase 2 includes some community vendors coming to campus. Indoor gatherings of up to 10 people are permitted with masks and physical distancing, and the pool, chapel, and library will reopen with restrictions. The full guidelines are posted on Vassar's website. In the Catskills, anyone who visited Paisano's Pizzeria at 10 South Main Street in Liberty on August 25th, 26th, and or 27th may have been exposed to someone with COVID-19, according to an alert issued by Sullivan County. They should contact Public Health Services at 845-292-5910. As of September 3rd, there are 7 known cases associated with this location, 2 of which are also connected to exposures at Nelly's Sports Bar at 456 Broadway in Monticello on Saturday, August 15th, for which the county previously issued a health alert. SUNY Delhi will begin surveillance testing on campus for COVID-19 starting September 15th. SUNY Delhi will use SUNY Upstate Medical University's new pooled testing protocol, which involves testing a pool of multiple saliva samples all at once and retesting the samples one at a time to identify individual cases if the pool comes back positive. As of September 4th, no further cases have been found at SUNY Cobleskill, where two students tested positive for COVID-19 in August. University President Marian Terrazino wrote in a public letter to Coble School students that the outbreak at SUNY Oneonta was a reminder to the campus to be careful. Quote, there are no guarantees that our campus will be immune from the outbreak experienced at Oneonta, and we may be required to stop on-campus instruction at some point. Still, our collective behavior will play a major role in our ability to remain open. We are in this together, and you have earned a seat at our planning table, unquote, Terrazino wrote. Resorts World Casino in Monticello will reopen on September 9th, the Sullivan County Democrat reports. Local officials applauded the news announced in the wake of Cuomo's decision this week to allow casinos to reopen at 25% capacity with new safety guidelines. Cuomo's staffers and the New York State Commissioner of Gaming toured Resorts World recently to see new safety protocols put in place by the casino. Assemblyperson Eileen Gunther told the Democrat, quote, they always say it ain't over until the fat lady sings, unquote, Gunther said, quote, well, the fat lady sang success, 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 unquote. This has been the Coronavirus Report from the River Newsroom. Go to theRiverNewsroom.com for more information about anything in this report.
World crashes in into my living room. Television made me what I am.
Hey! This is At The Row. You're listening to WGSC 9.7 FM. 8 Rare. Pastor Hudson. Radio is the greatest thing ever.
Tune in WGXC's new Sunday morning schedule with the Reverend Kim Singletary and There's a Bright Side Somewhere every Sunday morning at 8 a.m. That's followed by the teens from Hudson talking about books they've read on Bound by Books after the local news at 9 a.m. And at 10 a.m., there's more teens. The Catskill kids from Clubhouse Radio are on at 10 a.m. with lots of music and talk on your community radio station, WGXC.org, 90.7 FM.
Wave Farm programs are made possible, in part, by the New York State Council on the Arts, with the support of Governor Andrew Cuomo and the New York State Legislature, the National Endowment for the Arts, the Andy Warhol Foundation for the Visual Arts, the Greene County Legislature through the County Initiative Program administered in Greene County by the Greene County Council on the Arts, the Alexander and Marjorie Hoover Foundation, the Foundation for Contemporary Arts, the T. Backer Fund, the Joseph Family Charitable Trust, and hundreds of other generous individual donors.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Blanche Mackey of Craryville, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
Like a fire hydrant, like a public drinking fountain, like a park bench, WGXC is always there for you. At your service, 90.7 FM, Community Radio.
German measles, Russian flu, Montezuma's revenge. And why do we say a foreign word whenever someone sneezes?
Tomorrow, I'll take a look at swine flu, up close and personal. This is Les Nesbitt.
This Labor Day, honor essential workers and remember those who died. I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! With Dennis Moynihan and our weekly Breaking the Sound Barrier podcast. From windows and rooftops through the early months of the COVID-19 pandemic, millions around the world cheered essential workers on the front lines who daily risk contracting this highly contagious disease. Janitors, grocery store workers, drivers, warehouse workers, letter carriers, food delivery people, teachers, and transit workers, along with the doctors, nurses, and hospital staff caring for patients, all became heroes as the worst pandemic in a century swept the planet. Thousands of these frontline workers died. As we celebrate Labor Day, traditionally marked by cookouts and beaches, followed by the return to school, we should honor these fallen heroes by wearing masks, social distancing, and fighting for a science-driven course correction to this country's catastrophic pandemic response. President Donald Trump must invoke the Defense Production Act, making hundreds of millions of free masks and tests available, coupled with contact tracing, isolation, and quarantine. Kaiser Health News and The Guardian built a regularly updated database of frontline U.S. healthcare workers who died of COVID-19. As of this week, 1,079 were on that list. Among them, 39-year-old Adiel Montgomery, a security guard at Kingsbrook Jewish Medical Center in Brooklyn. In late March, he lost his sense of taste and smell and had flu-like symptoms. 2 weeks later, he suffered acute chest pain and died suddenly. He had complained about the lack of personal protective equipment, or PPE, which eventually arrived, just not in time to save him. In Arizona, Cheryl and Corinna Thin, sisters from the Navajo Nation, both worked at Tuba City Regional Healthcare as an administrator and a social worker, respectively. Before they both became ill around March 20th, each without face masks had interacted with patients and had expressed concerns about the PPE shortage. Cheryl succumbed to COVID-19 on April 11th, Corinna on April 29th. The Navajo Nation's per capita coronavirus infection rate is among the highest in the United States, with over 500 deaths at last count. Meatpacking workers toil shoulder to shoulder, exacerbating the risk of infection. At a JBS plant in Greeley, Colorado, an ongoing COVID-19 outbreak has infected close to 300 out of 3,000 workers, killing six of them, all immigrants. Tinai, 60 years old, fled Burma and lived in a refugee camp in Thailand before making it to the U.S. The day after she became a grandmother in late March, she was put on a ventilator. She died May 17th. Stories like these dot the nation as the number of COVID-19 deaths nears 200,000 with no signs of slowing. The true number of essential workers who've died will never be known, as they're not tracked by any federal agency. Trump has consistently downplayed the numbers of cases and victims, pushing false cures and conspiracy theories instead of leading a coordinated response. Around the country, thousands of meatpacking plant workers have become infected. Scores have died. UFCW, the United Food and Commercial Workers Union, criticizes the failure to compel corporations that employ its members to report COVID-19 deaths. Meat processors JBS, Tyson Foods, Cargill, and Smithfield Foods, and retailers like Walmart, grocery chains like Albertsons and Kroger, and many more. Frontline essential workers are disproportionately people of color, with many sectors staffed predominantly by immigrants. They drive the economy, grow and deliver food, clean and care for the elderly, and provide childcare. Few have the luxury to decide to work from home. They don't have sick days or access to affordable health care. Medical workers still report PPE shortages. The United States, the wealthiest nation in history, has just over 4% of the world's population, but over 20% of the recorded COVID-19 infections and deaths. Trump's abdication of responsibility, rushing to reopen the economy while downplaying the pandemic as an election year strategy, has been stunning, lethal, and potentially criminal. Worker resistance to Trump's deadly pandemic response is growing. Teachers around the country have been pushing back against plans to reopen schools quickly without plans and equipment in place to protect them, their students, or staff, in a number of cases threatening to strike. In Detroit, 1,600 nursing home workers represented by the Service Employees International Union, SEIU, are threatening to strike as well, demanding a living wage, PPE, and better staffing levels to properly handle the threat of the coronavirus to nursing home residents and staff. As you celebrate this Labor Day, also commit to solidarity with our essential workers. The shouts of support for them from the windows and rooftops may have diminished as the pandemic drags on, but the risks they face every day have not. I'm Amy Goodman with Dennis Moynihan.
One speeding ticket, Columbia County.
Columbia County, everybody gets speeding tickets. How else do they pay for the roads to get plowed in the winter?
Election day this year is Tuesday, November 3rd, and WGXC's Philip Grant has a rundown on everything you need to know about voting.
October 9th is the deadline to register to vote in New York in the November election. That is the last day to postmark an application for the general election, which must be received by the local board of elections by October 14th. October 9th is also the last day an application can be received by Board of Elections in person to be eligible to vote in the November 3rd election. Anyone honorably discharged from the military who has become a naturalized citizen since October 10th may register in person at the Board of Elections up until October 24th. Changes of address must be received by the Board of Election by October 14th. In Columbia County, early voting begins October 24th at the Columbia County Office Building at 401 State Street in Hudson. In Greene County, early voting begins October 24th at the Greene County Office Building, 4th floor, Suite 430 at 411 Main Street in Catskill. Both early voting sites have unique hours, so call or check the Board of Elections website, Greene or Columbia, before heading to the polls.
Dan Clark reports for New York Now that New York voters can now request an absentee ballot for the November election online through a special portal, absenteeballot.electionny.gov. Absentee ballots are only issued for a reason, but this year voters can claim the COVID-19 pandemic as a reason for voting by mail. Governor Andrew Cuomo said, and I quote, "In line with the sweeping reforms we have implemented to make it easier for New Yorkers to exercise their right to vote, we launched the online voting portal through which every registered voter concerned about COVID-19 can obtain an absentee ballot," end quote. Election Day is November 3rd. There are no drop boxes locally for leaving votes. Absentee ballots must be received by the Board of Elections by 9 p.m. on November 3rd in one of the following ways. Through the mail. The ballot must be postmarked no later than November 3rd. Ballots can also be hand-delivered to the County Board of Elections office no later than 9 p.m. November 3rd. Absentee ballots can also be hand-delivered to an early voting poll site between October 24th and November 1st. And absentee ballots can also be hand-delivered to an in-person poll site by 9 p.m. on November 3rd. Amanda Fries reports for the Times Union, the instances of voter fraud are extremely rare in New York, and when they do occur, it is usually elected officials or candidates running for office and not the average voter committing the fraud. The Conservative Heritage Foundation, for instance, lists just 15 cases in New York since 2010. Most of those cases were false registrations of voters by candidates. There were just 3 cases of, and I quote, "fraudulent use of absentee ballots," end quote. Sean Morales Doyle, Deputy Director of Voting Rights and Elections at the Brennan Center for Justice, said of the 14 convictions since 2010, and I quote, "9 involved elected or public officials, candidates for office or political operatives. 3 were local developers accused of attempting to rig an election, and 2 were New Yorkers who voted twice," end quote. He went on to say, and I quote, "What we've seen for years now is that there are some that use the specter of rampant voter fraud to justify all kinds of restrictive practices that do nothing to prevent voter fraud, but do everything to stop people from voting. It's a distraction. It's not helpful, and it ends up being used to justify policies that disenfranchise voters and don't make elections any safer," end quote. The disenfranchisement of voters in New York is a much larger problem. Jennifer Wilson, deputy director of the New York League of Women Voters, said, and I quote, "In New York State, we see a lot more disenfranchisement than fraud. More than 14% of absentee ballots get thrown out. We have one of the highest rates of throwing out absentee ballots of any state in the nation," end quote. Officials recommended voters casting ballots by mail do so carefully, reading all instructions completely so their ballots are not among those election officials throw out instead of count. Read more about this story in the Times Union. Nick Reisman is reporting for State of Politics. The New York Board of Elections, August 31st, announced a statewide effort to recruit poll workers for the November general election as a result of the shortage caused by the coronavirus pandemic. The push comes one day before the National Poll Workers Recruitment Day, a day set aside to address the shortage ahead of early voting and the November 3rd vote. Poll workers tend to be older people, a demographic considered more vulnerable to the virus. More than half of poll workers in New York are over age 60. This year, poll workers are being tasked with facilitating social distancing, sanitizing equipment, as well as assisting voters. Poll workers must be at least 17 years old and registered to vote on Election Day. Information on becoming a poll worker in Columbia County is available by calling 518-828-3115. In Greene County, by calling 518-719-3550. And you can read the full story at nystateofpolitics.com. Grace Panetta reports for Business Insider the 5 common mistakes that may get your absentee ballot thrown out rather than counted. The U.S. Election Assistance Commission found that 23.7% of voters, around 33 million, cast ballots by mail in the 2016 presidential election, and more than 318,000 of those votes were rejected, about 1%. This year, there are fears of slow mail service, and the coronavirus pandemic is sure to have more people voting by mail. So the 5 common mistakes to avoid are: improperly filling out your ballot, follow the directions carefully. Amber McReynolds, the CEO of the National Vote at Home Institute and a former director of the Denver Elections Division in Colorado, said, and I quote, "You don't want to use red ink, marker, or anything that could be problematic. If your instructions say use black or blue ink, use black or blue ink. If it says fill in the oval, fill in the oval. I think it's really critical for voters to follow the instructions more than anything," end quote. Forgetting to sign your envelope. This is the most common mistake voters make. Using a different signature from what your state has on file. Use a consistent signature style. Voters can update signatures on file with the Board of Elections office by submitting a new paper voter registration form. Not including required additional documentation. New York does not usually require extra documentation. Sending your ballot back too late. In New York, ballots must be postmarked by 9 p.m. November 3rd to be counted. In-person voting takes place from 6 a.m. to 9 p.m. November 3rd, and early voting takes place October 24th to November 1st. Your forecast for the holiday weekend. Well, on Saturday, sunny with a high near 74 degrees. Saturday night, mostly clear with a low of around 53. It will be mostly sunny on Sunday with a high near 76 degrees. And Sunday night, partly cloudy with a low of around 59. And on Monday, Labor Day, mostly sunny with a high near 81 degrees. And Monday night, mostly clear with a low of around 61. And that is your weather update from WGXC. 90.7 FM, radio for open ears in Greene and Columbia counties.
Elevator going up.
Sun pulls away from the shore, and our boat sinks slowly in the west. We approach the island of Lulu, spelled backwards.
Ul-ul.
Ah, in the distance we hear Spike Jones and his wacky Wackakeans.
Listen to me,
said the demon as he placed his hand upon my head. The region of which I speak is a dreary region in Libya, by the borders of the river Zaire, and there is no quiet there nor silence. The waters of the river have a saffron and sickly hue, and they flow not onward to the sea, but palpitate forever and forever beneath the red eye of the sun with a tumultuous and convulsive motion. For many miles on either side of the river's oozy bed is a pale desert of gigantic water lilies. They sigh one unto the other in that solitude, and stretch toward the heavens their long and ghastly necks, and nod to and fro their everlasting heads. And there is an indistinct murmur which cometh out from among them like the rushing of a subterranean water, and they sigh one unto the other. But there is a boundary to their realm, the boundary of the dark, horrible, lofty forest. There, like the waves about the Hebrides, the low underwood is agitated continually, but there is no wind throughout the heaven. And the tall primeval trees rock eternally hither and thither with a crashing and mighty sound. And from their high summits, one by one, drop everlasting dews. And at the roots, strange, poisonous flowers lie writhing in perturbed slumber, and overhead, with a rustling and loud noise, the gray clouds rush westwardly forever, until they roll a cataract over the fiery wall of the horizon. But there is no wind throughout the heaven, and by the shores of the river Zaire there is neither quiet nor silence. It was night, and the rain fell, and falling it was rain, but having fallen it was blood. And I stood in the morass among the tall lilies, and the rain fell upon my head, and the lilies sighed one unto the other in the solemnity of their desolation. And all at once the moon arose through the thin, ghastly mist, and was crimson in color. And mine eyes fell upon a huge gray rock which stood by the shore of the river and was lighted by the light of the moon. And the rock was gray and ghastly and tall, and the rock was gray. Upon its front were characters engraven in the stone, and I walked through the morass of water lilies until I came close unto the shore that I might read the characters upon the stone. But I could not decipher them. And I was going back into the morass when the moon shone with a fuller red, and I turned and looked again upon the rock and upon the characters, and the characters were desolation. And I looked upward, and there stood a man upon the summit of the rock, and I hid myself among the water lilies that I might discover the actions of the man. And the man was tall and stately in form, and was wrapped up from his shoulders to his feet in the toga of old Rome. And the outlines of his figure were indistinct, but his features were the features of a deity. For the mantle of the night and of the mist and of the moon and of the dew had left uncovered the features of his face. And his brow was lofty with thought, and his eye wild with care. And in the few furrows upon his cheek I read the fables of sorrow and weariness and disgust with mankind, and a longing after solitude. And the man sat upon the rock, and leaned his head upon his hand, and looked out upon the desolation. He looked down into the low, unquiet shrubbery, and up into the tall, primeval trees, and up higher at the rustling heaven, and into the crimson moon. And I lay close within shelter of the lilies and observed the actions of the man. And the man trembled in the solitude, but the night waned and he sat upon the rock. And the man turned his attention from the heaven and looked out upon the dreary river Zaire and upon the yellow ghastly waters and upon the pale legions of the water lilies. And the man listened to the sighs of the water lilies and to the murmur that came up from among them. And I lay close within my covert and observed the actions of the man. And the man trembled in the solitude, but the night waned, and he sat upon the rock. Then I went down into the recesses of the morass and waded afar in among the hippopotami which dwelt among the fens in the recesses of the morass. And the hippopotami heard my call and came with the behemoth unto the foot of the rock and roared loudly and fearfully beneath the moon. And I lay close within my covert and observed the actions of the man. And the man trembled in the solitude, but the night waned and he sat upon the rock. Then I cursed the elements with a curse of tumult, and a frightful tempest gathered in the heaven where before there had been no wind, and the heaven became livid with the violence of the tempest, and the rain beat upon the head of the man, and the floods of the river came down, and the river was tormented into foam, and the water lilies shrieked within their beds, and the forest crumbled before the wind, and the thunder rolled, and the lightning fell, and the rock rocked to its foundation, and I lay close within my covert and observed the actions of the man. And the man trembled in the solitude, but the night waned, and he sat upon the rock. Then I grew angry and cursed with the curse of silence. The river and the lilies and the wind and the forest and the heaven and the thunder and the sighs of the water lilies, and they became accursed and were still. And the moon ceased to totter up its pathway to the heaven, and the thunder died away, and the lightning did not flash, and the clouds hung motionless, and the waters sunk to their level and remained, and the trees ceased to rock, and the water lilies sighed no more, and the murmur was heard no longer from among them, nor any shadow of sound throughout the vast, illimitable desert. And I looked upon the characters of the rock, and they were changed, and the characters were silence. And mine eyes fell upon the countenance of the man, and his countenance was wan with terror. And hurriedly he raised his head from his hand and stood forth upon the rock and listened. But there was no voice throughout the vast, illimitable desert, and the characters upon the rock was silence. And the man shuddered and turned his face away and fled afar off in haste, so that I held him no more. Now there are fine tales in the volumes of the Magi, in the iron-bound melancholy volumes of the Magi. Therein, I say, are glorious histories of the heaven and of the earth, and of the mighty sea, and of the genii that overrule the sea, and the earth, and the lofty heaven. There were much lore, too, in the sayings which were said by the Sibyls, and holy, holy things were heard of old by the dim leaves that trembled around Dodona. But as Allah liveth, that fable which the demon told me as he sat by my side in the shadow of the tomb, I hold to be the most wonderful of all. And as the demon made an end of his story, he fell back within the cavity of the tomb and laughed. And I could not laugh with the demon, and he cursed me because I could not laugh. And the lynx which dwelleth forever in the tomb came out therefrom and lay down at the feet of the demon and looked at him steadily in the face.
One ringy dingy. Is this Mr. Hoover? Mr. Jedgar Hoover? Good. Then I have reached the party to whom I am speaking. Mr. Hoover, this is Miss Tomlin from the telephone company. It is my duty, Mr. Hoover, to discuss with you some of the abuses of your instrument. Yes. Yes, it does sound rather un-American, doesn't it? Now then, Mr. Hoover, I have your file here before me. Oh, yes, I'm sure that you have a file on me, too. After all, turnabout is fair play. Yes, it does sound perverted. Now then. Mr. Hoover, I have a find that you and your agents have indulged in the illegal and unfair practice of wiretapping. Wiretapping. Oh, Mr. Hoover, listening to other people's conversations. Well, how do I know? From listening to your calls. That's how I know.